Rock and roll, I call no one.
I can't take it anymore.
We didn't start the podcast. It was always burning since the world's been turning.
This is We Didn't Start the Podcast, an album by album rewatch of Billy Joel's increasingly complex career.
Really? I'm Adam Ragusea, and I don't really like Billy Joel.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I really do. Welcome to episode 4, where we dissect Billy's third album, Street Life Serenade.
It is technically his third solo album, but it's his second album on Columbia Records. It's his second major label album.
Yes.
So that's why I think the label Sophomore Slump is appropriate for this record that nobody knows and isn't that good.
Yeah, you know, I had to listen to this album a couple of times, and then I would listen to it, forget I was listening to it, and start thinking about something else. It just sort of slid off my brain. It didn't make any kind of...
No impression.
It's like the milquetoast Billy Joel.
Oh, the milquetoast
Billy Joel. The milquetoast Billy Joel.
As opposed to the other kind.
Dynamic.
Well, this album came out October 11th, 1974. I want to point out that all of Billy Joel's albums have come out in fall.
Is that a thing? Is that a music industry thing?
I think
go back to school with a new Joel album.
I just think it's because fall is the season of nostalgia and regret
and story songs.
Yeah. Mega, remind us what else happened in 1974.
German band Kraftwerk releases their album Autobahn. Kraftwerk is credited with helping popularize electronic music, so we have another thing to blame Germany for.
Sure do. Stephen King publishes his first novel, Carrie, or as Billy Joel would have called it, Carrie.
The last Japanese World War II soldier, Private Turo Nakahama. Nope, that's not even right.
Not going to work here anymore, anyway.
Not going to work. Let's see, Nakamura? There we go. Okay, Nakamura. The last Japanese World War II soldier, Private Turo Nakamura, surrenders on the island of Morota, later inspiring a really funny episode of the TV show Archer.
His greatest achievement. And the Gerald Ford administration begins, otherwise known as the Nixon administration sophomore slump.
1974 was the year Billy Joel couldn't get his shit together.
Not a solid year for Joel. Subsolid.
It was geologically subsolid.
Sinkhole.
It was a sinkhole. Right. The sinkhole streetwalk serenade slump. Put that on a t-shirt.
So it's pretty obvious that Billy knows that this is not his strongest effort. And in fact, he sort of explains why in the clip that he did for his complete albums collection DVD extra thing or whatever these clips are coming from that are on YouTube. Let's listen.
Street Life Serenade was 1975. I had been on the road...
He's wrong about the year.
Playing in
74.
Theaters and clubs and opening up for other acts. I opened up for the Beach Boys during that time. And didn't really have a lot of time to write new material, but there was a lot of pressure to put out another album after Piano Man, and I just didn't have a lot of stuff. There's even two instrumentals. And when's the last time, you know, a singer-songwriter put out an instrumental? One's called Root Beer Rag, and the other one is called The Mexican Connection.
What?
There's a song on here, Roberta. That's about a hooker. I'm not going to get into that.
Oh!
The Entertainer. That was kind of a hit. I am the entertainer. I know just where I stand. Another serenade, another long-haired
guy. I think we can end that there.
Well, this whole album for me sounded like, you know, when you were in college and you had a paper due the next day and you're just like, oh, shit. And so you just pull a bunch of stuff out of a lot of other papers and just hope to God that maybe your professor isn't like real great at reading. That's what it seemed like to me.
The cover art, though, is a step forward, right?
I don't know. It's some folk art bullshit. I mean, it didn't even seem like Billy. I'm like, who did this album?
It sort of looks like if an art, like in a painting class where sometimes they ask you to, like, they ask kids to paint famous paintings.
Right, yeah.
It looks like some 12th grader painting an Edward Hopper painting.
Right, exactly. Or like someone's like, just paint America.
Just paint
and
America.
Like, this is the town my grandparents live in. It doesn't have, well, Billy's on the back of it, And he, there is a photo of Billy in the back of this album.
Looking
and
very unhappy.
Looking very unhappy and sitting in the way that like teachers who really want to prove that they're cool and they flip the chair over.
Yeah, he's doing
like,
a Riker.
He's totally doing a Riker.
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, I gotta, you know, give you my truth. And the truth is this album isn't good.
It's not good.
God bless him.
God bless. It's not good.
This is not good.
Have you noticed that our Long Island accent is like a blend of the super fans from Chicago and then like your mom from Woburn or something?
Our accent. It's not good.
It's not good. This Long Island accent. It's not good. La, 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 la. So the album is called Street Life Serenade, and then the song, the first song, is called Street Life Serenader.
Yes.
Which is the transitive verb.
to serenade.
Okay. So this is the one who Street Life Serenades.
Yes.
Is a Street Life Serenader.
Why would they pull this track as the title track?
It's not the title track, because it's got a letter that's not in the title of the album. It's not the eponymous song.
That's true. That's true. Barely true. But it does make a really good companion piece to the entertainer, because you kind of have this, you know, he's a street life serenader. He doesn't do it for cash or fame. He's just out there busking because he loves the tunes. Again, this song will just fall off your brain. It doesn't make any impact. Super long intro.
Oh my god.
It's like I got 5 minutes to kill.
It's really boring too.
It really is.
Just playing a melody in thirds. Da, 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 ba, ba. This seems really below him, honestly.
Oh. Street Life Serenader. And it actually sounds the way it was recorded, like he's singing underwater. It's real tough.
We've talked about how Joel puts on voices a lot. Like, I don't even know what his real voice is. And I don't know why. It's so overacted. It's like he's chewing the scenery all the time. And I don't know why he's like all the way in the back of his throat for this song.
He may have had a cold. Midnight Masquerade. Okay, and the synthesizer is like, what is going on with the synthesizer in this album?
Where's the synthesizer? There's no synthesizer.
Whatever is making his voice sound like that, but also later on you'll hear a lot of synthesizer.
Michelle.
But what is that? What is making that noise?
He's singing and playing
the
piano?
Singing, but there's something over his voice.
Okay.
It's like,
I admit that I actually like the chorus of this song. I think it's got like a real kind of lazy, swampy groove to it that I think
it's a swamp groove.
That's a thing. That's
I like it.
Ugh, okay. But it's like, I don't want to have to write another verse. So go straight back to the chorus.
Nope, I got to get on stage for the Beach Boys.
Yep. What is up with this freaking thing?
See, the album's so bad, even YouTube is like, just cut it off.
Whew, this is a boring song.
It really is.
All right, can we stop listening to
this
now?
Yes. Yes.
What do you think the song is about again?
I think of it as a companion piece to the entertainer, because the entertainer is talking about how he has to fit into this, maybe I'm giving it too much thought, has to fit into this, you know, pop star niche, but the Streetlight Serenader, he doesn't care. He's just out there doing his thing, baby.
Okay, so a decidedly less soporific song on this record is Los Angelinos.
Yes.
Which is, again, a song that I think is more popular in its live version from the Songs in the Attic record. But
right.
Here's the original. Busting out the Fender Rhodes. Again, musically very simple for what we've seen from Joel so far.
He was really tired this week. Yeah.
This is a two-chord song.
It feels like double vision. It feels...
Sure does.
Los Angelinos.
Yeah.
Midwestern ladies.
Yeah, they're so shallow, these women. They're so shallow always. And they don't understand me. It's always the woman's fault.
It is.
With Joel. Chorus. Oh, halftime. Yeah, listen to that groove.
Would that be a swamp groove?
Yeah, it's a little swampy. This is the worst part.
Time gone by.
So, we've started kind of taxonomizing Joel voices, but I think that now we can start taxonomizing Joel songs. We've discussed his story songs.
Story songs.
Lots of story songs. This is like, I think there's another category we need to introduce, which is Joel's disdain songs.
Yeah, he's real good at that.
Super disdainful of so many people. And in this case, it's like, yeah, New Yorkers and other people who will end up in Los Angeles and they're so fake.
Right, and it does. That seems below him. That seems like an easy swipe to make.
Yeah.
Because everybody hates Los Angeles unless you live there. Then you love it. But it does seem like shooting fish in a barrel.
Shooting,
in a
shooting
bottle.
Fish in their butt.
You're gonna shoot some fish in your butt.
It's called the anal fin. Okay. Jeez.
A lot of people have it. But yeah, this. Los Angeles.
Oh, you totally biffed it. Doing ersatz like Latin accent, that's something that he does a lot, and it's so offensive.
Yeah, I'm just offended by this whole album.
Oh, okay.
Joseph Stalin, Melancholy, that's a rare copy of Rockefeller Company, the Communist Bloc.
It's time to talk about our first sponsor for today's show, Bayshore Commons Shopping Center in Bayshore, Long Island. Bayshore Commons, Stop and Shop at the Stop and Shop.
Yes, so there's a vacancy in between the Stop and Shop and Fratelli's Pizzeria.
I know that, yeah.
Yeah. It's a really good location because you got a lot of the old ladies who go to the Stop and Shop with all of their cans and their bottles, and they got to get
they need that nickel.
Yeah, they need that nickel. What's that called?
A deposit?
Deposit. Why is it a deposit? A deposit is when you put something in. You're getting money out when you put in the bottles and the cans.
That's true. Maybe you pay the deposit when you pay for the bottle, when it's full of something.
I see. It's built into the cost.
Yes.
Okay. That
we
makes
just had
sense.
To talk that out.
So you got the old ladies, they're streaming in there, and then they come out of there with all their nickels, and what are they going to spend it on?
Nickel slots. They're going to go to AC and spend it on nickel slots.
Okay. So if you want to start up a nickel slot joint, take a look at Bayshore Commons. It's a solid shopping center. You know, you're really going to get the best out of your rent.
You really are.
Okay. We want to thank them for their support.
Good work.
Oh, it doesn't matter what they say in the paper, because it's always been the same old scene. There's a new band in town, but you can't get the sound from a story in a magazine. Hey, ain't that your average team?
All right, Meg, so this album does have one hit-ish song on it.
It does. It's The Entertainer.
The Entertainer.
Which is Billy's ode to the shallowness of the record industry.
Another disdain song.
Another disdain song.
Okay.
What is that song? What is that sound? What is that?
That is a Moog synthesizer with the glide effect turned on.
Oh, it's so bad.
I like it.
I am the entertainer, and I know just where I stand. Another serenader and another long-haired band. Today I am your champion,
I may have won your hearts, but I know the game, you forget my name, and I won't be here in another year if I don't stay on the charts.
The charts.
Not on the charts. I am the entertainer, and I've had to pay my price.
So, what's going on at Columbia Records when he wrote this? He has such disdain.
Well, I think he's disdainful at Artie.
Oh, yeah. I think he's still... I think he's got some rage at Artie.
Yeah. Well, Artie is... I mean, at this stage, Artie is still taking all of his money, basically. Merry Way.
Merry Way. Gotta get a 305. Been all around the world. I played all kinds of palaces.
So I actually think this is, like, a decent song, and I like the keyboard riff, even though you don't. But... But when I think about this in historical context, right, this is the follow-up single to Piano Man. And so wouldn't you hear this and think, wow, this is such a lame attempt at recapturing the magic of Piano Man, because it's another first-person song about a musician who's struggling to make it and buddy-buddy-blah. Like, it really is like a lame attempt at rebottling the magic.
I don't know if it's a lame attempt to rebottle the magic as it makes sense narratively. Like, the Piano Man was at a bar, and
next stage of his career.
The next stage of his career. But I was thinking... that if Kraftwerk was as an electronic music was starting to get more of a footing in the culture, that maybe again we have a situation where Billy is absorbing the culture around him.
Absorbing is the nice word for it.
And
he's a very, very impressionable boy, that Billy.
Very impressionable boy. And just repackaging it. And that's why you have all of these, I find, jarring synthesizer. I'm pretty sure that in the 1970s, this kind of music was just piped in onto streets and something. Like, I can't imagine.
Well, yeah, he's the Street Life Serenader. Duh.
Duh.
It's right there in the name.
But, you know, again, he's not doing anything particularly original here. He's not the first one to push back against, you know, record agencies? Is that what
the record the agencies?
The record agencies? Is that a word? My grandson has a job with the record agency. He's very important. He's got a secretary.
So Joel says something else in that contemporaneous would be contemporary to when that song came out, which
right.
is not right. Contemporary to here.
Yes.
To us.
So is this a later 1980 interview? Or
No, it's contemporary to us.
Oh,
it's contemporary.
Okay, yes. Okay, yeah.
Okay?
I wasn't sure.
As opposed to contemporaneous, which would be from 1974. Okay?
You know what I'd like to see? Since Billy is having a hard time writing songs now, what if he just went back and rehauled all the old ones? Like, what does Billy at 65 think of Street Life Serenade, and how would it be different? As an artist with as much, you know, experience as he has, how would he make it different?
I don't follow.
Billy re-sings the hits is what I'm saying.
Oh, Billy re-sings. That's all he does.
But yeah. Not, like an album.
Like an album?
Reworked of all of his famous singles, you know.
So what you're saying is that you want to hear Billy Joel, fat, sad, old Billy Joel, who can't sing very well anymore, re-record the hits.
Yes.
Just
yes.
The way that, you know who did that? Was
did that?
Def Leppard, because it was some kind of record company thing, and they didn't want to sell the old records anymore because they weren't making money off of them. So they literally re-recorded all of their albums.
Wow.
As fat, old, sad people. And they put, and that's when you go to buy like Hysteria or something on iTunes right now, it's not the original one. It's fat, old dudes singing songs written by teenagers. From Sheffield.
From Sheffield.
Anyway, what I was saying is that there's a thing in that contemporary interview with Billy Joel about The Entertainer that I think is pretty funny.
The Entertainer, that was kind of a hit. I am The Entertainer, I know just where I stand, another 7-8, another long-haired band. When I had long hair. Today I am your champion. I may have won your hearts, but I know the game. You'll forget my name. I won't be here another year if I don't stay on the charts. So the disc jockey's saying, okay, first he's a piano man. He's bitching about playing in a piano bar. He's moaning about his life here. Now he's got a successful record. Now he's bitching about being successful with The Entertainer. So it's funny how, you know, the perceptions of things.
Yeah, it is funny how when you're disdainful of people, they don't like it. Jesus.
I like how he brought that up and had no defense of it other than, yeah, so that's a thing that happened.
It's like that's truly Trump-like, you know?
You think that's Trump-like?
Yes. It's just like, well, you know, people have their reactions. I've heard things. People are going to take things whatever way. I mean, you can't be responsible
right?
for it.
Right.
I can't be responsible for the fact that I was disdainful of an entire industry and then they didn't like that. Like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah. Yeah. It is very, I don't know why he would have brought that up just to be like, yeah. So I was disdainful. I mean, that's kind of the reading between the lines of the interview.
I think you're giving him too much credit.
You could never give Billy enough credit.
By the way, do you notice how, like, in this interview, he's just got model boats behind him?
I wonder if he made those.
Did he make his own model ships?
I'm going to write an album about making model ships.
Billy loves boats.
Billy loves boats.
He loves his boats.
I run the dangerous crowd. We ain't too pretty, we ain't too proud. We might be laughing a bit too loud. I bet it hurt no one. Oh, Virginia, show me a sign.
So there's really only one other, I think, reasonably well-known song on this album, and it's not really well-known by most people. It's well-known by most white people who took piano lessons in suburbia in the 1980s and 90s, and it's called The Root Beer Rag.
This is one of the two instrumentals on the album that Billy was... earlier said, what singer-songwriter has two instrumentals? Come on.
Yeah, it's like, so he's saying that this is his filler.
Yeah, this okay? is his filler.
All right.
You can kind of imagine, like, old-timey film when people are, like, running around. Like, and now we got, now it's like 1912 and we are at a baseball game and running around the bases. New York City, 1920.
So yeah, all of the cool, the older boys in the piano studio, they'd be the ones that would play this at the recital, okay? It was just like, oh my God.
So good.
He's playing a Billy Joel song. That's so cool. I'm playing Schumann or something. Who plays Schumann?
I just want to say something about America when I'm listening to this. America! I'm telling you, son, you gotta go west. You gotta hunt those buffalo. You gotta wear suspenders and a straw hat.
I think you can stop that now. In all seriousness, I think that this is a good piece of music. Well, it's not a good piece of music. It's not, I don't... Something needs to be said here that is sincerely complimentary of the Joel. And that is that, like, of all of the piano, you know, all of the rock stars who play piano, there's many who I think are, like, better musicians, better songwriters. But, like, Billy Joel is the strongest pianist of any piano-playing rock star ever.
Yeah. Just amazing. And if you watch his interviews, he's usually in front of a piano, if not, you know, behind some boats. and he really takes the time to... he's almost like an educator when he's like, and listen to this. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And
That's exactly how it goes.
I nailed it right there. I really think that it's just sort of like just in his wheelhouse.
I think this episode is the sophomore slump episode.
This episode sucks so bad.
So listen, so this is one such interview. This is the one from 1975, like the weird British one that we listened to the other episode, and where he actually looks pretty handsome and not fat at this stage. And here's where he's talking about his piano technique and comparing it to contemporaneous rock stars.
Yes.
Neil Young is a guy like that. He writes on the piano, and I don't really think he knows how to play the piano when he, you know.
Disdain.
That's so simple and fresh. I would never write anything like that because it's too simple. It's too obvious.
The other song that's very impressive.
He's throwing shade at Neil Young.
All right, let me skip it. So there's a place where he talks about Elton John. Hold on.
Elton really broke the piano pop barrier, and he became the the definitive piano rock artist. And anybody who became known after him was compared to Elton John. I don't play the same way he does. Elton's style is very rhythmic, you know. Like that.
He has other songs other than Benny and the Jets, you know, Dick.
Or like Leon Russell is another guy he used to get comparisons to. And he's more like gospel, you know. All right, ooh, you know.
Not racist.
Whoa.
Not racist at all.
Ouch.
Probably, it's more five finger. More movement stuff. I took a while for people to get away from using the Elton John comparison. I think it's pretty much died down at this point.
Took a while for people to understand me. The genius of me.
That. How old is he at this? Like 20? No.
This
probably
is, this
around
is
like 27?
This is right around the time of Street Life Serenade. So
yeah.
That would have, yes, he'd just, be 27.
Just the confidence of him is bordering on, I mean, it's bordering on arrogant, obviously. But
bordering?
Well, he is good. But I'm just gobsmacked every time I see an interview with him, and he's just, you know, I'm the best, and pretty much saying that other people can't touch him lyrically or musically, and you just kind of want to, you know, show him that he is good, but he's not that great.
Well, I think that at this stage, he hadn't developed the self-deprecating Billy Joel shtick
right.
that he would later really be known for. And he did all of these tours under the name of An Evening with Billy Joel, and it would just be like him telling stories about that time that he stole his drummer's wife, because that was hilarious. You know, I saw one of those with my parents when I was like 10 or something at the Eisenhower Auditorium at
did
Penn
you?
State. Yes.
Oh, I'm jealous. I've never seen Billy live.
And yeah, boy. The moms were just charmed.
Oh, I bet.
Because
I bet
he's so self-deprecating. But I think that's because this video that we just watched, I mean, he wasn't really successful yet. So I think he was still trying to talk himself up, you mm-hmm. know. And then once he had sold 80 million records, I mean, all the money went to Artie. Artie,
you got about $17 out of
that. You stole my money, Artie. All the money from the records. You have it all. So I think, you know, when he gets more successful, he gets more self-deprecating. And I think that that's better.
Right.
Although it ends up getting so self-deprecating that it's just, I mean, he actually, Billy Joel is the pioneer of the humble brag, right?
Yes.
Pioneer of the humble brag. That's the one thing we can say he invented.
But don't you think that maybe Madonna is someone who does the exact same thing, in that she takes musically things that the mainstream wouldn't have necessarily have heard and repackages them in a mainstream way, so she's ultimately doing a service.
I get a service.
A service. A cultural service to the world.
I think that Madonna, in terms of the complete Madonna-ness of her, it's not, you can't just look at the music, right? If you look at her image and her kind of subversive role in the popular culture, I think that there's something original there. But, you know, what is there to Billy other than the music? There's like there's a schlubby guy in a weird tan suit jacket. Like, what's up with that? And a Jufro.
And an ex-model or model ex-wife.
Yeah,
Several X's in that.
But anyway, I think that in this video that we just watched, he did say something pretty astute, getting back to Root Beer Rag, which is what we're talking about, mm-hmm. is he describes his pianotique as a five-finger technique, meaning that, you know, when you're like a rock piano player who's really taught him or herself how to play the piano, you tend to think in terms of block chords. Like the whole hand, it's kind of the bear paw technique, like the whole hand goes down on the keyboard at once. And it really, it's only people who are classically trained, who played Baroque music and counterpoint and stuff like that, who think about each finger as acting independently. And that is really what distinguishes his piano playing than other kind of rock players, and does make it really great. And I think that Root Beer Rag is like a totally great tune. And I think that, again, this is my problem with Billy Joel is not that he's not skilled. He's tremendously skilled. It's his skill taste differential is off the charts. He has no taste.
I disagree. I disagree. I think he sees.
You're going to pick this hill to die on? Serenader is the one that you're going to.
Oh, gosh. I think that he sees something going on in society and in society. In society and in, you know, the musical world. And, you know, he does do this sort of repackaging. And I think that's what makes him great.
Mm.
He's an interpreter.
Very impressionable.
A very impressionable guy.
Living here in Allentown. Oh, my gosh. That's her driving in town. And it's very hard to start to say. Wow, this is a hard one.
Time now to talk about our second sponsor on this episode of the program, Danny's Mobile Spray Tan. We bring the tan to you. Danny and his wife Mercedes, they've taken an old 1990 Dodge conversion van, they've torn out the seats, they added shower cubes, and they do the spray tans right there in the van. There's nothing worse than not being able to get to the tanning salon because of a busy week of first communions, longshoremaning, or DJing. Now you don't have any excuse to stay pasty and disgusting. You call Danny and Mercedes and you tell them to bring the van right over.
I have used Danny and Mercedes a couple of times. Mm. I had a couple of first communions. I had a couple of confirmations I needed to get to. Mm. My nieces, a couple of my nephews, I had to just bing, 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 bing between all the churches. Between all the church, just throwing out first communion presents. I got no time to talk to you. Got no time to talk to you, little Susie or whatever your name is. But I know that I didn't want to be pale and disgusting in the photos.
Yeah, because what you want when you have to wear a light colored dress to a wedding for a summer wedding, which you don't wear white.
You don't want to wear white.
You don't wear white because that's offensive. All right, that's inappropriate.
But you would wear maybe a blush pink.
Blush pink, okay. What you really want is you want the look that has the highest color differential possible between your skin.
I like a little bit of drama.
You want to look like when you do an inversion on a photograph.
Yes.
You know?
That's exactly what I asked Danny and Mercedes to do. I said, you know, inversion photographs, you know, old negatives?
No, I don't want that. Not the old negatives. No, like when they reverse the color spectrum on 2020 to make somebody look like a child molester.
Oh.
And it's like, dong. That's the effect that you're after. You want just, you know.
I want a stark. I want to walk into the church and someone say, what? That's what I always go for.
But the eyes are still bright, right? Because you got the slight circle. So the eyes are just like.
I got circles around my eyes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a total, like it's like a raccoon.
Yep.
Like a raccoon's eyes.
Like a raccoon's eyes.
It's just like, whoa, you know.
Right.
Just reflect. They're reflecting the back porch floodlights, you know. It's just like, whoa. There's just like two headlights out in the yard. And then just surrounded by darkness, right?
Exactly.
That's the kind of tanning effect that you want.
That, you know, and now it can come to you via 1999 Dodge conversion van.
Just get in the van.
Just get in the van. Just get in the van.
I don't need you to worry for me because I'm all right. I don't want you to tell me it's time to come home. I don't care what you say anymore, this is my life.
All right, Meg, in an album that is basically all deep cuts, is there a deep cut that you'd like to feature?
Well, it's not really a Billy album unless he has a love song on it. So let's talk about Roberta, which we
a love song, which
we just found out in a very dismissive way is a love song about a prostitute,
a hookah.
He said a hookah. You're right. You didn't even give the dignity of a prostitute.
There's a hookah on the
song
record.
About a hookah. There's a hookah on the record. Her name's Roberta.
I had never heard this song until we listened to it.
Roberta, you say you know me,
but you can't know me. I'm too complex.
I see only what you're paid to show me.
Okay, pretty clearly about a hooker.
Yeah.
In retrospect.
Time. I wish you had the time.
Oh. But then he talks about a hooker who's in a time crunch.
Who's in a what now?
A time crunch. He keeps bringing up, I wish you had the time. I wish you had the time.
Well, she's looking at her watch. She's just saying, like, Billy, you paid for 35 minutes, okay?
Okay. I thought maybe she was just overscheduled.
Okay. So Joel, contemporary Joel the one who was contemporary to us in the year 2016. Contemporary Joel said, that's a song about a hooker. I'm not going to talk about that.
I'm just going to gloss over it.
As though that's, he's being like, you know, I'm so mischievous. I'm such a bad boy. I paid for a hooker. Dude, what kind of person pays for a hooker?
Especially when you're married to your ex drummer's wife.
So there's that. You're
did
like,
Elizabeth know about this?
You're a vaguely famous rock star at this stage, okay? And you're paying for hookers, and you think that somehow makes you look cool?
He's a man of the people. If the people were paying hookers.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So because he's so down to earth,
he's
going to do the things that the other boys from Long Island do.
Exactly.
And one of those things is pay a hooker named Roberta.
Named Roberta.
And refer to her, again, it's a disdain song, disdainfully as a hookah.
Exactly. And what gets me is, like, hookers, don't they usually change their names, like, to Misty or, you know, Amber? Why would you stay with Roberta?
Maybe Roberta is an exotic name on Long Island in the 70s.
Maybe with Judy. Maybe Judy and Roberta are
why,
exotic.
Judy?
Why?
Why,
Judy? Why? Why? Why, Roberta? Why?
Bye, Roberta.
Bye. He has $50. So sad.
I think you need to adjust your hooker dollars for inflation.
How much do hookers cost these days?
I don't know, 50?
I don't know. Maybe?
So you're talking about, it would have been like a nickel or something? you could have walked across to the Stop and Shop, put in one of his bottles.
Right, got himself a hooker. Making plans for the night.
You know, I can't afford to buy you pearls, but maybe someday when your ship comes in, she'll understand what kind of guy I've been, and then I'll win.
All right, Meg, we have to update our Joel Power rankings. For new listeners to the program, we are keeping a running tab of Joel albums from best to worst. Right now, in the number one spot, what do we have?
Number one spot. Don't we have Piano Man?
We have Piano Man.
We've got Piano Man
in the number one spot, followed by Attila.
Attila!
The Hassles self-titled debut, and then Hour of the Wolf is at the bottom right now. And I'm really not feeling comfortable about having Piano Man at the number one spot, because that's a really terrible album too. But I'm not feeling like we're going to be able to put Streetlights Saraband or whatever this is into the number one spot.
No, I would be okay with putting this half-assed album at the absolute bottom.
Dang.
It annoyed me. I felt like, Billy, you should have tried harder.
Should have tried harder, kid. Billy.
You should have tried harder, guys.
Tried harder on this record.
I think it was like a first draft. And I don't like that he lacked the integrity to say this isn't good.
Joel is about nothing if not integrity.
That's my Billy Joel. My Billy Joel's got integrity.
All right. We're putting Streetlights Schmugadoo.
Schmugadoo.
At the, what is this? The number six spot on the Joel Power rankings at this stage. Burn.
I know. Hour of the Wolf is better than this album.
Now, Meg, what do we have coming up with the next album? With the next record?
With the next record, we've got Turnstiles.
Turnstiles.
Turnstiles. I'm
which
excited about
has
that.
Has what on it?
I don't know. I'm going to be like Billy and not do my homework.
Google
Turnstiles.
He's so urban. He's such a man of the city.
He really is. And I think it's probably a...
No, that's the actual...
What if they are? Who invented them?
That's the Wikipedia article for actual Turnstiles. We don't want that. Turnstiles band... No, there's a band called Turnstile from Australia.
Yeah, with STYLE.
Yeah. Turnstiles album.
I hope it's a return to form.
Say
goodbye to Hollywood. And
New York State of Mind.
Ah, okay, good.
Okay, all right.
Good, 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 good.
Good stuff on this
good
record.
Good stuff.
Now, Meg, I think it's time for us to watch The Adventures of Young Billy Joel. Do you want to explain to the people what this is?
Yeah. So on the Kroll Show.
Who is the Kroll Show?
The Kroll Show. What is his first name? Why does he want to say Danny Kroll?
Danny Kroll?
Because that just sounds
Davy
right.
Kroll?
Davy Kroll.
He's still in the Navy.
Yeah. And he probably will be for life.
Nick Kroll?
Nick Kroll, yes. Nick Kroll.
Nick Kroll, okay. Yes. Explain to the people who the Nick Kroll is.
The Nick Kroll is a comedian, a very funny comedian who had a show on Comedy Central there for a while. And as a part of the show, he did The Adventures of Young Billy Joel, where Billy Joel's growing up in like Montauk or something, and it's the imagined adventures of Billy before he got his first record album.
Let's watch.
Let's watch it.
Captain Jack.
Well, hello there, Billy.
I caught you some worms down on my landscaping job. Thought you could use them for some bait.
Sure, here's a quarter for you, lad.
Whoa, 25 big ones? Maybe I could go buy that boss jacket I saw in the store window.
Well, watch this line for me for a moment, and there's another quarter in it for you.
No problem.
Hold on to it tight, huh? No daydreaming. And watch out for the Montauk Monster.
Oh, Captain Jack. You kill me.
Kill me.
He actually kind of looks like a straight-haired Billy.
Huh? Hey, BJ. What's up, man?
Hippie jerks.
Oh, Beans, I told you not to call me that.
Hey, you want to hit Billy?
Oh, no thanks, Isabella. I got to stay sharp if I'm going to write my story songs.
Yeah, you stay sharp, BJ. We're going to go dance naked on the beach.
You want to come?
Oh, I can. I told Captain Jack I'd hold his rod.
Oh, BJ. Yeah, you go hold his rod, BJ. Man.
Standing on a dock, looking at some water, waiting for a change to come my way.
And over he goes. All right, now the rest of this I don't think will work on the radio, but
yeah, please watch the skit. It's so funny.
What I love about that is because that's total those that like rhymes thing where he's like, that's totally how Billy Joel rhymes songs.
Something, something, daughters.
Gin and, you know, oh my God.
I got to stay sharp to work on my story songs.
And do we have any Billy's words of wisdom?
We do. But this album was sort of like a freshman creative writing exercise for Billy. So we're just something to really pull out and show that. So this is from the Great Suburban Showdown. Sit around with the folks. Tell the same old tired jokes.
Nice rhyme.
Bored to death on Sunday afternoon. Mom and Dad, me and you, and the outdoor barbecue. Think I'm gonna go hide out in my room.
Something, something, daughter. Oh, thanks for listening to We Didn't Start the Podcast. I'm Adam Ragusea. I don't really like Billy Joel, and I think I'm backed up on that this week.
I'm Meg Donahue, and I still really do. Hey, hey, let's talk Joel on Twitter. Use the hashtag Joelhole. Tell us what we got right. Tell us what you got wrong. Do you like Street Life Serenade? You are wrong. That album sucks. Tell us about it. Use that hashtag.
You can find Meg at Donahue Meg. You can find me at A Ragusea.
This podcast is just a hobby project created by us in our spare time. We're not using it to make money. The opinions expressed are our own. They're not our employers. They're not our dogs. They're not our families. Really, I don't know if anybody shares our opinions.
I sure don't. And yes, some of the sponsors that we mention are in fact real businesses in the tri-state area, but they have no association to us. They've not given us money. It's a joke, people.
And sometimes not even really good ones.
I worked really hard on my gag.
Oh, it was so good. I was talking about mine. Mm.